The Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 12, Land, Sea and Air, Part 3.
It's not commonly appreciated that oxygen levels are not normal when you take a commercial flight, and that applies to everyone, all of the passengers on board and to the pilots, flight attendants, everyone, because it's not too much of a difference. So for most people, it's not really noticeable and not a problem. But there are some people who have particular medical problems where it can be a problem. And that's one of the reasons I'm interested in it. My name is Thomas Smith. I'm a National Institute of Health Research clinical lecturer in anaesthetics at the University of Oxford. I spend half my time working clinically in anaesthetics and the other half of the time I spend in research. My research broadly is related to heart and lung physiology. So I'm interested in how the heart and lungs work. And in particular, I'm interested in responses to low oxygen levels. And that can be low oxygen generated in the lab setting or at high altitude in mountains. And also, I'm particularly interested in low oxygen levels associated with aviation.
The cabin on board a commercial flight is pressurized in order to make planes out of lighter materials and consume less fuel during a flight.
The cabin pressure inside is not supposed to go any higher than an equivalent of 8,000 feet if you went up a mountain. I find it interesting that that compromise was reached back in a different era, around about World War II, when the sort of people who were flying on aircraft were generally quite young, fit, healthy, often military aviators, and certainly not 90-year-old people going on their holiday to the Canary Islands, which is what happens now. So it was reached in a different time when there was a very different population of people being exposed to that change in oxygen levels.
When the aircraft cabin is pressurized to an equivalent height of 8,000 feet, there's a reduction in air pressure of around 25%. What effect does this start to have on our body?
As you might have experienced when you take off and you have, for example, a bottle of water that's got the lid screwed on tight, it might start to expand. Or a packet of crisps is another one that I've seen pilots use as their indicator of cabin pressure changing, because it puffs up really tight and even bursts if cabin pressure is going too high. So those same changes are happening inside the body as well. And just occasionally people have a problem where there's gas inside the body somewhere where it can't escape. And so that expansion related to the lowered atmospheric pressure can actually cause problems. Fortunately, that's quite rare. Because there's a roughly 25% fall in pressure, that means there's a roughly 25% fall in the partial pressure of oxygen. And that's the part that I'm particularly interested in, because that means your body is receiving less oxygen than it does normally.
How do our bodies respond to lower levels of oxygen?
If you think about going up a mountain, for example, one of the well-known things is that you start breathing harder, so an increase in ventilation. And the hypoxic ventilatory response, as it's called, has been studied a great deal. Other responses that are well known are things like an increase in the production of red blood cells mediated by the erythropoietin hormone, EPO, which is the one that has become famous for cyclists using it for improving their performance without going to altitude. So the body starts trying to improve the amount of oxygen it's delivering to important parts and important organs.
Thomas and his colleagues have studied the blood pressure in the lungs, something that's known to increase in response to hypoxia in mountain climbers, but has not yet been studied in the mildly hypoxic environment of an aircraft cabin.
The reason that's of interest to me is that those sorts of responses can actually have dangerous consequences for a small number of people. So as an example, take a patient who has a condition called pulmonary arterial hypertension. What they have is raised blood pressure in the lungs, often for unknown reasons. And it can be quite a devastating disease, actually, which causes progressive limitation of their heart and lung function and can really severely impair their normal daily life, and actually can quite often lead to early death. So it's a very serious situation, and what you really don't want to do is for their blood pressure in their lungs to go even higher and make the heart work even harder and potentially tip them into heart failure. So that's a specific example, fortunately a rare disease, but one where being exposed to even a slightly reduced oxygen level could, in theory, further exacerbate their underlying condition. And that's a real problem for people with that condition, because they are often in the stage of life where they want to travel. They're often relatively young, perhaps with families and jobs, and they want to travel just like everyone else does. And it can be difficult when that causes problems for airlines who don't want them to get sick, obviously.
Thomas and his group have so far studied healthy volunteers travelling on commercial flights.
We've been using ultrasound to look at measurements in the heart, so that's referred to as echocardiography. And you can now, for the last few years actually, we've been using portable echocardiography machines that look a bit like a big laptop, and we can actually take it on a flight. So we've used this technique and made these sorts of measurements in lots of people in the lab over the years, and actually at high altitude as well. We did some experiments in Peru a few years ago in the Andes. But the aviation studies, we were able to study 8 people on a commercial flight. So this was a normal scheduled commercial flight from London to Denver in the US. And we were able to study people who were part of the study, and they weren't just random passengers, and make some measurements on them by lying across some of the seats in the back row of the economy class cabin. It did cause quite a bit of interest from some of the surrounding passengers.
What have been the main findings of this study?
Blood pressure in the lungs does increase in normal, healthy people when you take a commercial airline flight. And that was something that wasn't known before and actually wasn't anticipated, because the change in oxygen levels is really not that great. We've also found that in older people, this response seems to be stronger. So it's possible that older people are actually more at risk. What we know from other studies that we've done and other people have is that that response varies enormously between different people. So some people are at the end of the spectrum where they have a really much bigger response than normal. So if you happen to be that sort of person, perhaps with a bit of heart and lung disease, perhaps you're quite elderly, and then you take a flight, that's the sort of situation where I think it's possible this becomes important.
So what are the implications of these findings for people who want to travel by plane?
I think as long as you're a healthy person, I don't think there's any problem from that sort of response. And it's interesting, people have looked to see whether pilots, for example, have any effects from this repeated exposure to slightly reduced oxygen levels, and whether or not they acclimatise a bit, as if they're going up a mountain, that sort of thing, and it doesn't seem to be the case. So I think as long as you're healthy, you're okay.
Having found these effects on healthy people, what does Thomas hope to investigate in the future?
What I hope is that this sort of research, we're able to make it safer for people to fly in whom there are medical concerns. And at the moment, there's really not a lot of evidence to base decisions on. What we don't want is for people to be denied the ability to fly and travel if there's no good reason. We also don't want them to fly if they really shouldn't. So hopefully by studying what's actually happening to people when they fly, it will help us to make those decisions. The other situation where this is relevant is in patients who are being transported by air. And I've done a lot of aeromedical work in the past, transporting people even very long distances between continents. And when people are critically unwell, you really don't want things to be perturbed, then these sorts of oxygen changes could be important. And so in my own practice, I've certainly started making sure everyone's given some extra oxygen.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Brian McInwells. This podcast was produced for the University of Oxford by Steve Pritchard. For more fascinating science, visit www.oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk.